Hello, everyone, and welcome to another America's Conservative Podcast. I am your host, Ed Densel. Haven't talked to you since last Thursday. Friday, I took off. I had to drive over to Orlando for the tournament that I had this weekend. Played pretty well. Pretty well. If you'd have told me that I would have finished where I did, I finished 12th out of 70 players. And I had a two-shot penalty for losing a disc, which I think ended up really close to the basket. So it probably cost me three strokes. There were like leaves down there, and we couldn't find the disc, but all of us knew it was close. But when you can't find your disc, you have to go back to the tee. So instead of taking a two or three on the hole, I took a five. So I played really well, and probably to the last couple holes, got the yips right at the end of the last round yesterday. But I can't complain. Those courses have dogged me since 2012, I'm going to say. 2012, 2013. The one course that I played Saturday afternoon, I actually quit after playing it last August. And I played it on Saturday from longer tees, tougher conditions, and I shot one of the best rounds on it. So my game has come a long way since last August. I was very happy to I should have finished top 10. Like I said, I had some couple things, but any player can say that. But the course is just not friendly to the way I play, but I managed to fight through it. And I had a good time, played with some good guys. Putting was spectacular. My putting, I mean, I missed a couple ones that I should have hit, but I hit some ones that I probably usually don't count on making. So there was a lot to like about the way I played. And my whatever I'm doing in practicing, my practice the last month has really worked. I saw it going back to Floral City and then playing at Cliff Stevens a week ago in the wind and fighting through that and doing okay. And then this week on a couple courses that have completely destroyed me over the years, to manage to play them and come in essentially what was a top 10. Because I know that disc was close. It didn't go out of bounds or anything. It's pretty good. Pretty good, especially since I only play those courses once a year. So there you go. And that's why I missed Friday. Feel really good today. Felt good all weekend. Don't feel tired today. My feet, the shoes that I wore, are no good. Which I think affected my play yesterday as well. So I got to do something about my shoes. But other than that, I'm back. It was good. I'm glad I went over there and got some work done while I was over there as well, which is nice as well. So let's get to the program. Some things have gone on since last Thursday, and I'm going to try to catch myself up on all this. I have to tell you, I didn't follow any politics or anything this weekend. Drove over there, played, watched some TV, worked on my other show a little bit. Played Saturday, too tired to do anything Saturday night. Yesterday played one round, hung out with some friends after the round, then drove back here to Tampa. Just did not really follow politics at all, just to be honest with you. But I know some things went on, and I'm going to start with Marie Le Pen getting her butt kicked in the French election this past weekend. That wasn't totally unexpected. Now, you should know that even though she got her butt kicked, that's the best that the National Front Party in France has ever done. Easily. It's not even close. Way better than any other time. And so it seems weird to me that after they have this big win, or they lost. I mean, she lost. What was this percentage? She got 35% of the vote. Macron got 65% of the vote. As soon as I saw those numbers, I thought somebody should tell Donald Trump, this is what a landslide looks like. Not what you did. Not how you beat Hillary Clinton. You know, this is what a landslide looks like in a real free election, in a democratic republic, whatever you want to call France and whatever we are, republic, where people get to vote for their leaders. This is what a landslide looks like, not what you did. So it was a fairly easy win for Macron, but where I was going with that is it seems strange to me now that the National Front Party has done so well in that election, gotten more votes than ever, that it now they say that they are going to change the name of the party. I don't know what's going to be changed to. That seems like an odd marketing choice. I thought that this is exactly what I know about that party. National Front seems like a perfect name for it. They're nationalists, put nationalism first, so it's out front, I guess you could say. National Front seems like a great name for it. So, I don't know. That just seems strange to me. So we'll just have to see. Maybe they have a better name in mind. It'd be like the Republicans changing, I guess, their name of their party after coming close to winning something that they've never come close to winning before. Say it would be like in Nancy Pelosi's district. And the person who is the Republican gets more votes than any person has in Nancy Pelosi's district. But then suddenly they said, oh, Republican Party is going to change its name in that district to something else. That would seem like a weird choice to me. But, as a couple articles you see like on Hot Air and RedState.com, this was a no-win scenario for the French people. Macron is just going to continue more of the same. Whatever is, what's going on in France right now, it's going to stay in the EU. Their immigration policy is going to stay the same. Any Islamic terrorists in that country have nothing to worry about. And on the other hand, with Marie Le Pen, she probably would have gone too far the other direction. And probably weaken France in different ways. It was a no-win scenario for the French people. But you get the leaders that you deserve. And France, I guess, deserves either this guy who is just going to continue the status quo, and which means that the French people can expect probably more terror attacks and kind of the same attitude toward, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and we're going to track these people down, but they're still going to be letting people into the country, and they're still going to go along with European Union's immigration policies. Whereas Marie Le Pen, I think that if she had been elected, what probably would have happened, even though I know, hey, if she won, she would have gotten 51% of the vote, 50% plus one to win, and that's where I guess the French people would be if she won, as long as she won fairly, that she probably would have ticked off every country around her, probably would have isolated France, and maybe that would have been something that the French people eventually wouldn't have liked either. And I still say that what makes it so tough for the rest of those European Union countries is that they're all connected to each other. Whereas it was kind of easy for Britain to exit the EU because they were separated by water anyway. And I know that in the 21st century, we're closer than ever. I know that I talk to people in Ireland, on Facebook, in Australia, and elsewhere all the time, mainly about my other show, Unfound, that I do. So it seems like they could be just next door. But I think what we're finding out is something like the EU, geography still matters. That how close you are to another country in miles or kilometers and whether you share a border, it matters. And it matters if people who live in Britain can't just walk a couple miles and go from Britain to France. That you actually have to get on a train or get on a boat or get on a jet and go there. And it takes some time. Maybe, I don't know how long it takes. How long does it take the train to get from in the Channel I don't know, a couple hours, an hour and a half. I have no idea. But it just takes some time. And it's not like people can just walk between the countries. And that's, I think, what is going to make it, even if the French people had liked Marie Le Pen a little bit more, or any of these other states or countries, Italy, Germany, whatever. What makes it so tough if any of them wanted to leave is that they're right next to these other countries, and their citizens would be well more affected by exiting the EU than British citizens are. I don't think there's any question about that, and it's just funny how we forget that, and we forget it because everything seems so much closer today. When really, even though we have the internet and Facebook and jet planes and everything, England is still the same distance from France that it was forever, depending on how you define how the continents came to be. But pretty much forever, England and France have been separated like they are now. England from the rest of the continent of Europe has been separated, and it matters. And I think that's why the Brexit vote went one way, whereas the Marie Le Pen vote went the other. And so what I guess I'm saying is that the countries that are on the mainland of Europe are screwed. Granted, like I said, France probably screwed either way. But also, I think them being so connected geographically keeps somebody from running in that country that kind of can combine all of those, you know, the traits of Macron and the traits of Le Pen, which probably the combination of the two would have been a better candidate than those, than the combination of them those candidates separately. Whereas you could almost say that if Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton had been combined, I think that they would have been worse. As bad as they are separately, together they would have been worse. I don't think that's true about the French election. It would be nice if the French could have some sort of candidate that on one hand was serious about France's borders and terrorism and everything, but not, you know, kooky things that Marie Le Pen and, you know, just kind of weird. Can I just say that and not be too politically correct and go into the depths of it? Somebody who was a mainstream person who believed in tough borders and tough on terrorism, but also believed in free markets. And dare I say it, it would be nice if the French could have had a choice of an American conservative. Man, that would, I think that would just blow their minds over there, right? It would at least nice to see the choice. And I know there's French, you know, that I think I talked about a couple weeks ago. What makes France so different is that it's not unusual for all the truck drivers just go on strike and block up all the highways. That would just never happen in the United States. I know we've had some trucking things, not recently, maybe back in the 70s. Trucking issues and unions and all of that, but nothing like what they've seen happen in France over the decades. They just do some people going on strike all the time. And we just don't have that in the United States. It's just different. And I think because of that, an American conservative type of candidate there probably wouldn't go too far. But surely that kind of person would be better for France than either of the two choices that France had this year into, you know, this past weekend. So we'll see what happens. I think that the French people just voted for the status quo. And, you know, to give it to like an American comparison, although it looks like this election is going to be a lot closer, you look at this the special election that's going to be happening in Georgia. Remember John Ossoff, the Democrat? Remember he needed to get 50% of the vote to avoid a runoff, and he only got like 48%? Well, that's still going on, him versus Karen Handel, and that election's coming up. Well, is it tomorrow or next Tuesday? It's coming up soon. And, you know, you had this runoff, and it's a very close district. And so that's what happened with, that's how Marie Le Pen got to run against Macron. But, you know, the problem was that even in the, with all those candidates, Marie Le Pen didn't win, whereas John Ossoff did. Now, he's probably going to lose, and we'll get to that story maybe before this program's over. But Marie Le Pen had no shot at winning this election. You could even see that in the runoff, that Macron was going to win handily, and it ended up being 65% to 35%. So you can look at those, and that's, you know, Marie Le Pen is just not where the French people are. On the other hand, you know, over 3 out of 10 of them like something about what she had to say. So maybe when it comes to immigration, French are going in the right direction. I would say they're going in the wrong direction and a lot of other things. If I was a French person and was eligible to vote there, I guess I would have done what I did for the presidential election in the United States, which is not vote for either one of them. I would have voted for myself, like I did in the 2016 American election. So, I don't know what's you know what's going to happen. I guess that the National Front Party is going to change its name, going to continue to work on what they have to do to get more votes. Unfortunately, and I don't like thinking about this like this, but what may, and I'll say it again, I didn't want either of these people to win. I think they're all bad for France. But probably what needs to happen with the National Front Party to get more popular is for bad things to continue to happen. You hate thinking like that. You know, we've all experienced that in our lives, not just in politics. Well, I hope something bad happens to that person so he can learn his lesson. We don't like things to come to that. We hope that people come to their senses on their own. They can see their, see the problems in their ways, the bad choices, and straighten themselves up before, you know, they end up in jail, or they end up in dead, or they end up hurting somebody else. For the National Front Party, I don't know what more it can do marketing-wise to change people's minds about what it stands for. I think the people in France know what National Front stands for, and you see that 3.5 of them out of 10 like it and the rest don't. That's quite a bit. Now you may say, well, all they need to do is change 16% of that number. What else do you need to do? What else do you need to see as a French person? What do they call them? Francophiles? Is that what that is? French people just sound so bland. At least we can say Americans. What do the French people need to see about what is going on, has been gone on in their country in the last 15 years regarding terror attacks, to know that whatever they've been doing is not working? If they truly want to stop it. And I think that the National Front Party has to be very, very careful that it doesn't get into a situation that I think too many, dare I say it, conservatives get into this country with our own issues with immigration, that they almost start cheering, start hoping that some illegal commits a crime to further make our point that our borders aren't strong enough. I don't like doing that. And I don't think I do that too much. I may lapse into it once in a while, but I certainly do not like it. You know, whenever you hear me say that, you know, things are going to get worse before they get better, if they're going to get better, they're going to get worse first, that doesn't mean I like it. That just means that we haven't learned our lesson yet. I don't want it to happen, but I think that We've just not shown the ability to correct ourselves outside of feeling pain. You know, it's no different than a little kid putting his hand in the cookie jar. You know, he needs to get slapped a few times before he figures out that, no, I shouldn't be doing that. There are very, very, very few kids who put their hand in the cookie jar and then say to themselves, I don't think this is a good idea. I better stop before I get, you know, before I get spanked. We as the United States and too many adults and too many countries, they feel the exact, they're the opposite way. It's like they're a bunch of babies. Can't think for ourselves. Know what we're doing, we shouldn't be doing, but we're going to try it anyway. Maybe we'll get away with it. Maybe we'll get lucky. And I think as conservatives, we can look at what is going on in France in this election and learn some things. I hope. But Macron is the new president of France, and it's just more of the same. And unfortunately, and hey, maybe there's the other side of it. Maybe electing Marie Le Pen would have caused the Muslim terrorists to come after France even more. I guess you could make that argument too. But outside of the issue of immigration, with trade and economics, the French are in a poor place. The entire European Union is in a poor place. If you'll remember a couple weeks ago, I was talking about this stat that, you know, European Union is, the euro has been around since, what, 1999? In that time, the United States has created Google, Facebook, eBay, Amazon, all of these companies that are known all over the world. Now, the European Union has created nothing. Nothing. Now, I would, on the other hand, I would say maybe that the European Union has stopped other things. Because you have to remember, one of the reasons that the European Union, you know, was dreamt up, was to stop world wars, to make sure that a World War I doesn't happen again, a World War II doesn't happen again, where you have bullets and missiles and tanks and, you know, all those things flying, tanks rumbling, bombings, all of that between countries. No more France versus Germany. No more Italy versus France. No more Italy versus Germany. You know, none of that. So there was not just the economic issues that brought all of these countries together, but it was an idea that they needed to be closer to each other to stop wars from happening. And I totally respect that. I do. But if that was one of the motives, I think that that motive has to be laid to rest now, because I don't think that's ever going to happen again. And so now, being that you can move away from the idea of, well, we need to stick together so we don't start shooting each other, then you start thinking about the other reasons that they're together. And if it's the economics, if the only thing left is now the economic situation, then they are all worse off. They're all of them. Greece is worse off because of the European Union. Germany is, Italy is, France is, the European Union, all one currency. All of this trade between all of them hasn't helped anything. Mainly because each country is, you know, it's independent, but then they have to rely on one currency, and that's where you start getting these issues. You start creating kind of a welfare system, where Greece has to rely on, you know, Greece wants to make the money supply bigger, and Germany wants to restrict it, and other countries be somewhere in between, and some benefit from, some don't. These countries don't have control over their own currency and what's going on in their own country. They all speak different languages. They all have different cultures. And that's why the European Union hasn't worked as well as the United States, which was founded under the same culture. Each state may have its own identity, And you can even go from state to state. And having lived in three different states, I can certainly tell you that Pennsylvania, Nevada, and Florida are three different states. Even though we're all in the same country. They're all in the same country, but they are certainly different, and there's nothing wrong with that. And they're all beautiful in their own ways. But the 50 states of the United States were formed under the same culture, under the same language, with a lot more understanding. They didn't exist. The United States, these states came together to create the United States. Territories and colonies that already had a lot of the same principles. These countries had been around for centuries and then came together. And I admire that they want to work together to make sure they don't go to war with each other. And there is a lot of communication between countries, and citizens can go from one to the other. I love all that. I love all of those ideas. But economically, it's been a loser. It just has. And if I live to be 85 years old, will the European Union still exist here like 40 years from now? I have my doubts. I don't know how. I hope it breaks apart peacefully. Hope it's not ugly. It probably will be ugly. I just hope that it's peacefully. But it's hard to imagine, it's not even 20 years old, and already, you know, Britain has gotten out of it. But France is going to stay in. They wanted Macron, he's going to stay in, and that's the way it's going to stay for now. Let's move on to something else. And like I said, this was mentioned. I mentioned this runoff between Karen Handel and Joan Ossoff. Karen Handel is the Republican. Joan Ossoff is the Democrat. They had a open primary for an open seat. I think it was Tom Price's seat. And there was a bunch of Republicans running against Joan Ossoff. Joan Ossoff got about 48% of the vote, and Karen Handel got the second most. And so Joan Ossoff, had he won 50% of the vote, he would have just won the race outright. But because he didn't, now you have this runoff between him and Karen Handel. And the election is coming up, and there was a poll done recently, and it shows Karen Handel is up by 3 percentage points. Now you should know that this is a district that Tom Price himself won fairly easily. But Donald Trump back in November only won it by 1 point. This is another example where Donald Trump, despite all of his bluster, ran behind a fellow Republican in a district. I've told you about how he did not get as many votes as Marco Rubio here in Florida. He didn't get as many votes as the senator won in Ohio. On and on. You can pick various states where he got less of the vote than the senator running in that state did. Well, in this particular district, a House district in Georgia, Tom Price won easily, and Donald Trump only won by 1 point. So it's kind of a purplish to the red side. You have to figure, if Donald Trump only won by 1 point, that means that, 48% of the people must have voted for Hillary Clinton. So it's going to be close. It stands to be close. And does it even matter who wins here? I just for numbers, I guess it does. If the Democrats were to win this, I'm sure you'd see all sorts of stories being told on how Donald Trump is ruining it for Republicans, and Democrats are going to find some new life just in this one little district. Remember, this is just one of, 435 districts in the entire United States, and they're getting all pumped up about it. I can understand if it was like a senator. If this is a senator race, like some sort of runoff. I could get that. I got to believe that Karen Handel's going to win. And Joan Ossoff, though, is setting himself up nicely, maybe to rerun in 2018. Maybe he'll get some sort of position within the Democrat Party. But I thought you'd want to know that finally a poll has been done, and Karen Handel is winning by 3 points in a district where Trump only won it by one. I hope she does. Of course, given my choices, I hope she wins over him, although I can't say if I was in that district I would actually go and vote. But it wouldn't be nice to see another Republican get a larger margin of victory than Donald Trump did, just for my own personal taste. But I got to go to the break. I'm listening to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism, WRS Digital, Red State Talk Radio.
And we're back at America's Conservative Podcast. Let's move on to something else. Haven't talked about the Veterans Administration recently, but there was a story that the Free Beacon. Now, before I tell you any of this, I want you to know that this story is 2 years old. So what went on here happened while Barack Obama was still president. And really, though, I'm not sure how much the VA has improved since Donald Trump has become president or not. I think that this is something that is going to take a long time if it's ever going to get fixed. I make no guarantees on any of this. Who the heck knows if any of this is going to ever get fixed? It very well could be that the VA is just like this forever, and we just live with it. I mean, hey, we're living with all sorts of things in the United States that are killing people that we just accept. Heck, we just had Obamacare passed not so long ago, and now we're being told that it's great. It's not. I think that healthcare in this country is worse because of it, but we'll continue to have it just because. I don't know what this AHC, we haven't even gotten to that, and how it got passed in the House. We'll get to that maybe before the end of the program. So don't, never, ever, when it comes to government, never convince yourself that because it's killing a bunch of people, that it's actually going to change its ways. That might happen in the private sector, just because of competition, and I'm sure that if enough Coca-Cola drinkers died, eventually somebody would figure out and stop buying Coca-Cola. But when it comes to government, things don't turn around quite as quickly, if ever. That's why, what did Ronald Reagan say? The only thing that never dies on this earth is a government program, or whatever that saying was. I mean, he's much better at this than I am. So this is a two-year-old story, and what it talks about is just another one of these stories where a bunch of veterans who were on a list to get looked at died, just out and out died, whether they died from their illnesses or they had this specific case that was it the Washington Post or wherever. I went to the Free Beacon, then it took me somewhere else. With a soldier who had suicidal thoughts. He obviously had PTSD, and he couldn't get the care within the VA system, so he's allowed to go outside the VA system, but then things got mixed up and something got delayed, and he ended up killing himself, ended up hanging himself. So this is a variety of reasons that these soldiers, these military members, are dying, both men and women, whether it is from a disease of some type, or it is from taking, their own life because they have maybe they've developed some sort of mental condition. Now, the kicker on all of this, this article, it was good in that not only here's what you find out about. You know what the problem is with the VA? Just the simple, very simple, the feeling that I'm starting to get regarding all of this, it's two things, really. One, it's government health care. And two, I don't really believe people in the medical profession really want to work for the VA. Now, I can speak. Now, this is interesting. I know this from my own family, kind of my family. I'll explain. I have a member in my extended family who works for the VA. She's been working there, I'm going to guess, about a year and a half. Who this is, my brother Brian, who I live near here in Florida, 15, 20 minutes away from me. Probably more like 15 minutes. Less than that if you hit all the green lights. He's married to a woman who has two daughters. And they're both late 20s, early 30s. And the older one went to pharmacy school and did her internship, did all the things that you have to do. And so she is a doctor now, doctor of pharmacy. Smart young lady. And what you find out, and I just catch this in passing, it's not like I've had a deep conversation with her about it, but she, you have like a choice when you're getting out of school. You can either go work for Walgreens or CVS, or you can either go the private industry route, or you can go like she did. She now works at the VA. She works at the VA right here across the bay from where I live. In fact, it's unfortunately, it's the VA, the Bay Pines, where they discovered months ago. Remember that story about how a veteran had died and they just stuck him in a shower? She works at that VA. That should not shed any bad light on her personally. Okay, please. She's not a doctor, like a surgeon or anything. She's in pharmacy. But you know, just in passing, you find out that very, very few people who go into the pharmacy profession want to go work for the VA. Why? No money in it. Now, she did it just because she felt connected to these people, to these military members, and wanted to help them out. And God bless her for it. Okay? For her doing that. But I've heard her say it. I've heard her mother say it, who is her mother is my brother's wife, about how, you know, there's more money to be made in the private sector. The difference is that if you don't know it, when you go to work at one, you see a pharmacist at one of these Walgreens or CVS, wherever you go, and it's a private company, that there are sales quotas. There are quotas. It's just a business like anything else. You got to sell widgets. You got to sell cars. Got to sell refrigerators. And these pharmacists are under the gun. It's higher stress than you would normally imagine. But there's way more money in it. Way more money. And so I equate that to what I in reading all of this, you know, information about, and I've been thinking about this for a while, about this Veterans Administration problem, and it's just government health care. And what you read from this article is no different. Something that I've had in my mind is that I just happen to believe they're just not getting the best doctors and nurses and everybody out there. And even when they sink more money into it to try to get these people don't end up in the right places. And they gave some examples where you had two different facilities, I think one in Cincinnati and some in, maybe it was New Mexico, where the Cincinnati one was doing just fine, and meaning it's if the the numbers are to be believed. It got a bunch of people, you know, they were given money to hire more nurses, more doctors. They did. They got more people to come there. But they couldn't get the same amount of people to go to New Mexico. And you found out that places like Dallas that didn't have it, has not any problems with the VA, any stories like this, you know, was overstaffed almost. And then some in some other area was understaffed. And was having the, you know, big time problems. And what you find out, it's just not being driven by the market. The problem is that these people are willing to work for the VA, but only in certain areas. Nobody, I guess, wants to go live in New Mexico. No doctors want to go work in New Mexico. But even in San Diego, which has a higher than average of the population because there's submarines, and aircraft carriers and a lot of, you know, it's a main port on the, you know, Pacific side of the United States. Even a place like that, beautiful place like that, they sunk like $2.5 billion into the VA system down there to hire new people and everything else. And the wait times didn't change at all. It seemed like nothing changed at all, if these articles are to be believed. You know. And that's why we as conservatives, and not all conservatives, probably not enough conservatives, is that at some point we're going to have to stop talking about money regarding VA problems or any other sort of government problems that we have out there. Money is not the problem. It's not. I think it's a culture along with a supply and demand system that government is trying to alter. And what you see going on in the VA system with you, where you have surpluses over here and scarcity over here, it's no different than you would have found in the Soviet Union in the 1970s. You have bread over here, no bread over here. Water over here, no water over there. And nothing is being driven by supply and demand. Instead, it's being driven by a command economy. You're going to do this. You're going to do it now. Some expert somewhere telling you, we're going to make bread today. We're not going to make bread tomorrow. That's another thought that I read when I hear about all of these, this lack of doctors and nurses in certain places and a wealth of them in other places. In addition, you throw money at the problem to increase hiring and nothing changes. At some point, you just have to start saying, maybe it's the system. Maybe it's not what the budget is. Maybe it's not, you know, these administrators who are cutting corners for bonuses and everything else. Maybe it's just a mere fact that the VA system, what has happened over the last 15 years since there's been so much pressure put on the VA system because of going to Afghanistan, going to Iraq, fighting terrorism, that and terrorists and killing terrorists, that the system has been stressed for the last 15 years, and you just find out that government healthcare doesn't work. And you should know, you can even go back to the 1990s if you want to dig, that we should have been able to see this coming. What kept it kind of under wraps is that between the 1970s until the early 2000s, the system wasn't under stress. There weren't more patients. You know, it was a pretty equalized between doctors and patients and everything else, everybody else. But then it got stressed very quickly after September 11th, and we needed to do something right away. In contrast, maybe you could say something like the Vietnam War, where yes, 50,000, mostly men, died. But that was kind of ramped up, and it took a little time for it all to happen. Remember, the Vietnam War technically started while JFK was still president, and really didn't start dropping, you know, bombs and, you know, people really, really getting injured, 65, 66, 67. And there was a time to kind of get this all figured out, and they knew that this was all going to happen, whereas the war on terror started happening fairly fast. And it's a government system that is still scrambling to catch up. I happen to believe that if it was driven by the private sector, by supply and demand, that this would have all been sorted out a long time ago. I'm not saying that everything would be perfect, but we still wouldn't have these problems 15 years later, where you hear about veterans dying who are waiting for treatment and are getting delayed for this reason or that reason, people covering up paperwork and everything. Hey, as I've said many times, not just about this, but about anything in government, if the private sector was doing this, that private company would have been gone years ago, decades ago. And everybody would have been thrown in jail. And the American people would have agreed with it. Rightly so. That's what drives people nuts as well. Then I think subconsciously, people know that. I always give the best example of the space shuttle missions. You know, even though we thought, you know, space shuttle late 70s to when was the last takeoff? About 5 years ago, something like that, whenever it was. We really didn't shoot that many shuttles into space, you think about it. We really didn't. Really didn't. But we had two major fatalities. Challenger first and then Columbia later. Challenger was what, 1986? Columbia was 2004? Was it 2004? It was almost like exactly the same amount of time later. But if a private company, say a jet or a commercial air travel company, had the same failure rate as NASA did, that airline would be shut down in a second. The feds would come in, you know, and lock up all the pilots, lock up the CEO, lock him up and say, no, 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 we can't do this. You're killing people. NASA just keeps working. Nobody ever went to jail for the mistakes, obvious mistakes that were made in, you know, dereliction of duties, dereliction of engineers, easy to understand situations that they blew off. Nobody ever paid for that. If it would have been a private company, and we see with the, you know, we already see with all of these companies that want to go to space, space tourism and everything, that you know, the government is watching them very, very, very closely. Very closely. They make one little mistake. And I know we've had a couple accidents and things. A guy got killed on a test flight and everything. You wait until five or six people get killed at a time. You think that the government's going to go as easy on SpaceX or some one of these companies, or Virgin Space or whatever it's called, as they did on NASA? What do you think? I think everybody inherently knows this. We just put up with it. So getting back to the VA, imagine if your local private hospital, say run by a church or, you know, something, an organization like that, a private hospital, was found to cover up paperwork and falsify it. And they were covering up deaths for this reason, waiting in lines and everything. Imagine that. But the VA just keeps on chugging. These are things that I think that we as conservatives have – I know we've talked about them. I've talked about them. Other people have talked about them. But we haven't been – we unfortunately have not been able to extrapolate that out to everything involving government. We've failed at that. I think that we've made our point, even though I think the VA still sucks – we've made our point that the VA, it's bad. It's been exposed. There's allegedly things going on to fix it. But I think too many conservatives still think that there's a way to manage it the right way. I don't think there is. This is like believing that big government, you can use big government for conservatism. You can't. Just like you can't use big VA for great health care. It just doesn't work. That we keep dumping money into it and everything, I think, makes me think that people think it can work. You know, if we had a true conservative president or had true conservative leadership on all of this, we would just say, we're just getting rid of the VA system. We're just getting rid of it. And we'll figure something out. But government, we're not going to have these buildings that are government buildings that where there's government workers and these doctors and nurses are getting their paychecks for the government. That's just not going to happen anymore. I'm sorry, it's just not. We're going to let these people go out into the private sector and try to find a doctor, nurse, psychiatrist, whoever they need. And we have responsibilities to these veterans. They can send us the bill. And if that means that we get ripped off once in a while by one of these doctors double dipping or something, then you know what? We're going to just have to live with it because it's better than what we're doing right now. Once we get all that figured out, a few years down the road on how that's going to work, then we'll start tightening the screws down on those people that are in the private sector or ripping us off. But for now, we want to make sure that these veterans get the care they deserve and they're not going to die in some waiting line. But we as the government, we are getting out of health care. We're getting out of veteran care. Unfortunately, in the United States, we're going the opposite direction. We're now pulling private people into a VA type of system. We are. And I think, as I told my buddy Dave a few days ago with the HCA vote, this is all going to work fine until it really starts affecting employee plans. And it's going to start, it's going to eventually do that. Just like anything else, is that once a large group of people start being affected something, then some sort of change will happen. Until then, that everybody else who isn't affected by it too much isn't going to give a dang. It's not going to care. But this story at Free Beacon and elsewhere shows that you could sink all the money you want into this. It's the issue of how the system works and not how much money is put into it. And I think that's something it's very difficult to understand because we think in our lives that, well, we spend more money on something, we get something that's better. We can move up from a Ford to a Cadillac to a Mercedes to a Rolls Royce, and each time you kind of step up in quality and luxury and everything else. When it comes to government health care, throwing, doesn't matter how much money you throw at it, it's still going to suck. Bringing me to my final topic for today, and that is the AHCA, which passed in the House the end of last week. I'm not glad that it passed. I don't think that this is going to be improvement on anything. What I do know is that whatever comes out of the Senate, the Senate has already said, well, that's so, you know, it's kind of that attitude like, oh, isn't it just so cute and sweet that the House sent us this AHC? They are so fun over there. They're so nice and how dare. But we're not going to be. We're not going to have anything to do with this. The Senate, just like, ah, that was so nice of them to send us this. But we're not going to do anything with it. The Senate, obviously, and you see this for a variety of senators across the spectrum, from Susan Collins to Ted Cruz to Rand Paul, and maybe even some Democrats. They have all virtually said that this bill from the House is going nowhere. Now, you can think that's bad, you can think that's good, but that's what's going to happen. Whatever they're going to take a look at it, and then, you know, what then will happen is they'll do something, and then they'll send it back to the House, and that's how bills become laws in the United States. I think we got a long way to go on this for a variety of different reasons, from ideological reasons, from political reasons, from economic reasons, all sorts of reasons. And I think that if Paul Ryan, I still go back to what I've said for a couple months now. The reason it's this way is because you have a president. They don't want to set the Republican House and Senate does not want to send a bill to a Republican president that he is going to veto. So that's why it's watered down. That's why it's milquetoast. That's why it's lukewarm. Whatever cliche you want to use. That's why it is the way it is. But I got to go. You can find me at edwarddensel.com. You can find this program on Podomatic and iTunes. Tuesday through Saturday, 2 a.m. Eastern in the United States. Follow me on Twitter, USA Podcast, my other show, Unfound, doing great work over there, Missing Persons Program. Find it on Podomatic and iTunes and on Twitter, Unfound Podcast. I gotta go. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.